Getting a lot of compliments that the sherm is so clear, so you got to tell Rob Shaw it works, the system works. Okay, I'm ready?
Yeah.
Okay. Today is the 20th of February 2020. Where am I? 2012. I can't get over it. I'm still in 1912, and it's 2012. And what do you need to change your state?
Tomorrow morning
you'll be 73. It depends if you go with which calendar. In Washington, I wrote that there's always a period in my life between 72 and 73 at the same time. You know, it depends, December 2nd and the fourth night Hanukkah. Adult Jew, correct. Okay, anyway, I want to say good morning to the students who are wide awake here, even though it's 9 o'clock in the morning, and to all those listening across the world, which I'm humbled by, and I'll relate to some of the many comments that came in as a result of last week's Shir and Das Torah. But I want to tell you in advance that you've all caught an illness through the website. I have a student named Rabbi Yitzchak Rubin, and Rubinitis is a synonym for Savlinitis. He suffers from lack of patience. Last night it was very funny in the Shia. I quoted an article by Yossi Sarid, and I said the article is trash. And the article quotes Maimonides Chazal, and Yitzchak immediately shoots up. How do you say trash? What does it mean? He's quoting Maimonides Chazal. I said, give me a second. That's my next question. What did I mean? And I explained myself, Baruch Hashem. So I see these students. I just mentioned Das Torah. I haven't gotten it. I haven't defined it. I'm just, to quote Rebbe, I'm just warming up. And you can't believe how many fascinating comments came in. So I see Rubinitis has crept through the microphone. Anyway, a comment that I received from a member of the Slodowski family, a very fascinating commentary, Yair Slodowski. So my touching up the Ramban, if you recall, I explained my pshat in the Ramban, and I had the audacity to offer to give a pshat after the Rav said, it's good nishn chuyv sefen fin ala Rambans. I'm not obligated to answer every difficult Ramban. So Yair sent me a pshat that he heard on the Ramban. It's very similar to what I said, except I said it in modern context, and the pshat that he gave with jewelry sounds like a medrash, or sounds like the Chafetz Chaim giving a mashal, that the mitzvah, the jewels that we wear in our indigenous place to observe Torah Eretz Yisrael, and when we go into Galus, it's like the queen's daughter coming back ultimately. You have to know how to wear the jewels so when you come back, they will be resplendent and really add to your life where they are more meaningful. And my pshat is very similar but very contemporary. Mitzvot Nechutz Laretz are basically a frontier against a mechitza, a wall against assimilation. In Eretz Yisrael, willy-nilly, we don't assimilate. We can be amayorets, we can be ignoramuses. I just read in a magazine, a Bamishpacha, that one of the tragedies of Zionism, that Jews here grow up and know nothing about Yiddishkeit. But they don't realize that's not a tragedy, it's a blessing. They still remain Jewish. And one day we can reach them and be makar of them if we can only minimize the Chilul Hashem engendered by some who claim that they're religious. Haredim l'dva Hashem. And they're so far from it, k'mizrach mimarav. But anyway, be it as it may, it's a fascinating comment. Let me go further. There's no question that the Zemunat Chachamim is at the basis of our belief as Torah Jews. That's what came out yesterday in Shir when someone's sitting in, he's working here on a doctorate, and he comes when he can, Nechemya Stern, I believe his name is, asked me, now that we have a computer, why do we need Talmidei Chachamim? And my answer was exactly the answer the Rev would give. It's exactly the answer I heard from the Rev in so many different contexts. But Torah Chaim, Torah is living, Torah is an experience, Torah has to be part of us. Torah you can't pick up from a Murray Bunn book. And with all the computers in the world, we still need Emunat Chachamim. And Mi Anochi, who am I, even to mention this, I have to mention it shaking and with fear and trepidation and humility, because I was privileged to yet see the Shanghai crowd. I was privileged to yet see the Kletz crowd that survived. I was privileged to experience Lithuania pre-World War II. And of course, Mori Rebbe Rav Soloveitchik and all that goes around the Bris dynasty. And without that living tradition, where would I be today? And this is Emunat Chachamim. And a Torah Jew, not only does he believe in Emunat Chachamim, but Emunat Chachamim is the basis of Torah existence. And the whole concept of a Torah, of living it, experiencing it, feeling it. In other words, God can give it Torah, but to experience, to live it, v'chaye olam, this is Emunat Chachamim. Nevertheless, with Chassidus and the beginning of Chassidus, and I said it, the Rav said it, I saw it again in an article in Bamishpacha just this morning. These are old Bamishpachas, but some of the articles are fascinating to read. And I saw it this morning. The Polish Jewry would have disappeared. The Ribbono Shel Olam had mercy and sent down Chassidus. They should have a way to survive. They latched on to a Rebbe, a Tzaddik, and it gave them spiritual sustenance. And I showed you that already, so many hundreds of years ago, in the time of the Baal Tanya, these poor Jews who were spiritually bereft and suffering from the Chmielnitsky massacres, they started asking the Rebbe all types of questions. To put into modern context, questions on where I should send my child to school, what color car I should buy, the simplest mundane questions, what plane I should fly on, what flight I should take, etc., etc. And the first Lubavitcher Rebbe, and I showed you the source from the Tanya, and I quoted to you a parish on the Tanya, right there and then, the first Lubavitcher Rebbe complained bitterly, why are people bothering me? Why are people wasting my time? Who ever heard of going to a Talmud Chacham and asking such mundane, temporal, materialistic questions? And he actually adjured his Chassidim, please, don't bother me with these questions. So I got an interesting email from my Talmud in Brooklyn, Aryeh Lieberman, Chabadnik, from the old school, that he told me that the Sefer I quoted of explanation on the Rebbe last week, Sheyurim B'Sefer Tanya, were originally given in Yiddish on the radio, and the Rebbe corrected the manuscripts before they were given. After that, they were published in Yiddish and then translated into English and Hebrew. So it's interesting, I quoted that Sefer by Rabbi Weinberg, I believe it was, and here you have the story behind it, and that the Rebbe approved the text, which is important. Yes, Yitzchak.
But the Alter Rebbe said one thing, and then the sixth and seventh Rebbe did the other.
The sixth and seventh Rebbe, as you know, as I told you, by the 70s, no longer was Masada Kedushin. There was no longer Yechidit by the mid 70s. But relax, relax. We'll get there in a minute. Then I showed you a fascinating article with Reb Avadya's daughter, Adina Bashalom. That's his eldest daughter, the daughter who's always in the news, always in the headlines. She is a liberated woman, a feminist in the full sense of the word. A very fascinating life story. When she graduated elementary school, her parents wanted her to learn sewing, to go to a school where they teach a girl sewing, because that's what a proper daughter from a Sfadik family, the daughter of Chacham Ovadia, should learn sewing. And it's an amazing story, because she's a bit of a rebel, but her respect for her father and mother is unbelievable. And you have to bow your head to a woman like this. I have my own critique about her, that she makes the mistake of thinking being enlightened means being a leftist, a humanist. And you all know that I am a conservative with a capital C on that level, not a small C. A conservative conservative. Okay, now, And she says about her father how much he suffers from all these people bothering him with questions. And I know that feeling. I'm not a good person, I'm a bad person, I'm a rotten person, and I refuse to speak with anyone who's not my student. And that because I can't be bothered with shtuyot. What do I know about medicine? All it does, it hurts me. There's so many divorces going on today. I can entertain you and make you cry with stories that will last till the end of the shiur today. Just to tell you some of the divorces I know about, and lawyers, and what lawyers promise, what they deliver, what happens. It's a tragedy of tragedies, but there's nothing I can do. No one's going to listen to me. No one knows the concept of compromise today. No one knows that there's another person in your life, etc., etc. Now, so I understand that Dina Bas Shalom, I understand her. No one knows what you do to the children when you get divorced. How many times I've told couples, I'm talking not kids, I'm talking about people in their 30s and their 40s, what you do to the kids when you get divorced. You have no idea. I can show you papers I got from adults writing to me, because I never gave a test from the day I came in Aliyah. Coming in Aliyah by boat is the greatest thing in the world, because each day you come closer to Israel, you become more humble. When you finally see the lights of Haifa, that you're going in Aliyah, you're a different person. So I could never give a test again. I was a terror when I was a Rebbe in America. You can ask my students out of the 60s, but not from the day I came in Aliyah. So then in schools where I taught, the teachers used to complain, yeah, Rabbi Rekefer is so popular because he never gives tests. So I had to give a term paper. I would give a term paper. Who am I? And then the second term would be where I was and where I am. But you should see what students wrote to me, 19, 20 years of age. Worst day of my life was the divorce of my parents. Other girl, I remember one lady wrote to me that I thought the way everyone lives normally is one Shabbat there by their mother, one Shabbat there by their father. I'm not saying, Yaakov, that you can't have divorce. I'm not an idiot. Divorce is in the Torah. But nevertheless, when it's 30% or 25% of the Torah world where there are children involved, something is rotten in the kingdom of Denmark. Pardon me, Shakespeare, for quoting you. Now, Harry Merrillis, and I want to go further now. So Harry Merrillis, I ended off this year where Harry Merrillis in his blog, and you have to know who Harry Merrillis is. He's a Talmud of Rabban Soloveitchik. People tell me he's a wonderful individual. He's in Chicago, has children here. I understand his kids, if not all, some have gone right wing, I read to you from his column, what's wrong with Das Torah, that people don't think anymore, people don't use their own minds. And believe it or not, this past week, after I gave the shiur on Monday night, he had another column on Das Torah. And here he is furious, he tells a very interesting story. And this is a story that anyone who made Aliyah is caught up in this story. What language do you speak to your children? In other words, we made Aliyah, and until the day we came in Aliyah, we spoke Hebrew to them. From the day we came in Aliyah, we spoke only English to them. And what language do you speak to your children? Labriot. And I can tell you, because we spoke English to our children, they spoke English to their children, and all my grandsons speak English perfectly. The overwhelming majority, you might think they grew up in Brooklyn, grew up in the Bronx, speak it absolutely perfectly, flawlessly. They don't read English as well as they read Hebrew. They don't write English as well as they write Hebrew, but they speak it. And I have to tell you, it's a big advantage to the state of Israel, because without going any further, some of the kids wind up in very select units in the army and working for the Israeli government. Again, I don't have to elaborate. And the fact that you speak perfect English is a big plus for keeping our people alive and well and the state of Israel flourishing. And again, I need not elaborate. I refer you to Washington and just use your own imagination with the chapters on Russia. Now, so what language do you speak to the kids? And language is important for it. It's not only important that a kid should be able to handle a computer. Kid should be able to go if he wishes, to go to medical school, to go to advanced training, PhDs, because, to give you a simple example, I have a grandson in medical school in the Technion today, and he tells me many of the textbooks are entirely in English. He tells me some of the lectures are entirely in English. And he has a tremendous advantage. And we're talking about the Israeli. There are two medical schools for Chutz Laretz kids, or at least two that I know of. There may actually be three. There's going to be a third in Bar Ilan, I understand. But there's one in Tel Aviv, and there's one in the Technion. But I'm talking about the Israeli medical school in the Technion. But even the Gaul, who wanted only French textbooks, had to back off, because they told them, if you're not going to have English medical texts, you're not going to have good doctors in France. So you see, having English is a blessing. Now, let me ask you a question. Everyone in this class, Nehemiah, I just quoted you 2 minutes ago, and you were not here. Everyone in this class, your native language, including mine, is English. Okay, I will admit that I picked up Hebrew, I'm totally at home in Hebrew, I picked up Yiddish, I'm totally at home in Yiddish, but my native language is English. I count in English. I always say you can tell a person's native language when he stands in the bank and you see, and say, that I fear things, then it'll break into Hebrew. One, two, three, uno, dust, whatever. I forgot all my other languages. So that's how you can tell. Tell me, have we suffered any because our native language is English? Is our commitment to Torah any less? Is our commitment to Torah Hashem, to Mima, to Am Yisrael, to the people of Israel, is it any less because our native language is English? So, and it's a gradual process. I can already see that the grandchildren, some of them are intermarrying ethnically, everything we spoke about, and believe me, their wives will not speak English to them, except when they probably get angry at them. They'll use some word they learned in high school. Outside of that, they will speak Hebrew to them. So Tuesday, February 14th, in the blog of Emet V'Amuna, Harry Merrilis, he is furious. He tells the story of a couple that made Aliyah many years ago, and their Israeli-born children speak English so fluently that if they moved back to America, no one would know they weren't born there. Ah, but then he says, there are families who made Aliyah as newlyweds whose children barely speak a word of English. And even if they do, it is a broken, barely understandable English with a heavy Israeli accent. And he goes on to describe the tragedy that these grandchildren cannot communicate with their grandparents. And he says this is quite common among religious Zionists to have made Aliyah. And I have students who I taught over the years. One of them, it hurts me, was killed in a terrorist attack right after he spoke with me about some safety he wanted to publish. A week later, he was killed by a stone, where it became a vegetable and then died. You know, people say stones don't kill. One of our greatest crimes is that in the state of Israel, we let our enemies throw stones at us and we don't react. A stone is as bad as a bullet. A bullet kills 90% of the time and a stone kills 10% of the time. But it kills. And so some of these kids, you know, they would only speak Hebrew. Born, bred in America, they want to become Israelis, want to integrate. It's the Mekka's Arab crowd. And I always told them, slow down. Your grandchildren will speak Hebrew naturally. Relax, there's no crime to speaking English, but of course, no one listens to Rakefet, and it doesn't matter, but I can express my opinion. Now, here's where we come to Das Torah. Right after their first child was born, this American family already, must be a Beit Shemesh family, became Haredi. They go to their Rav and they want Das Torah. What language should they speak to their son? And the Rav told them that only Hebrew should be spoken until their kids are older and in school. Something about English would be a foreign influence that may negatively impact upon the children's love for Eretz Yisrael. And he goes on here, he is furious. The kids can't speak with their grandparents. The young children think, why bother learning English? So they can just speak to a grandparent when they visit? It's not worth the trouble in their minds. They only see their grandparents once in a blue moon anyway. And at that time, they will struggle through it. And then he writes about how important English is. Airlines, airspace, computers, the language of world commerce, etc. And the Rebbe gives them advice that the kid is going to have a negative influence. Says, why did he answer them like this? And why didn't the Rebbe turn away and tell them, make your own decision? And instead, I'm quoting Marilis, they therefore do not discourage questions like this. Instead, they answer them stupidly. Sometimes, as was the case here. How did we get there? How did the Haredi world get to a point where they ask their shalos like this to their rabbis and treat their answers as though they were written in the Torah? The answer can be given in two words, Das Teira. And he goes on and on, very strongly talking negatively about a Rebbe who would answer a question like that, and even take the question at all. Leave it to the people. Let them think. Okay. Now, let me come to some of the comments I got on this very primitive beginning of Das Teira. I've just scratched the surface, but I got some very fascinating emails from Hasidim. And I just want to mention Mati Katz and Mendy Edelman and his brother. And very fascinating. And essentially, these Hasidim are saying to me, yes, it may have begun with Hasidim. And I stand on what I said 100%. I quoted the O.W. Yehuda to you. And everyone's aware of the O.W. Yehuda. And they sent me interesting information about some Hasidic rebbeim who will not say L'shem Yichud K'dshah B'richu, so as not to offend the O.W. Yehuda's tshuva. And they make an interesting point here. That the Hasidic concept of what you might want to call Das Teira is very different than the Lithuanian concept. And I was going to come to this much later in my lectures, but I just want to relate to it now, that when a Hasid goes to a Rebbe, the Rebbe is like a father image to him. It's not a Rebbe forcing himself upon a Hasid. It's like asking advice from your father, from your mother. Generally speaking, when we are growing up, who do we ask advice of? Our parents. And a Rebbe is like a father to a Hasid. More than that, Das Teira's practice today, it is the approach of Agudat Yisrael that if you don't follow our concepts, you are a guy, you are an eisvaf, you are a pushtak, you are an apikoris, you are a trumpenik, you are a paya. Wow, that's absolutely right. The Hasidic world doesn't say, no gay Rebbe is going to be angry at Aaron Rakepet for having a different attitude towards, for the sake of argument, women, sex. I'm not a gay Hasid. What the Ger Rebbe teaches, what the Ger Hasidim practice, that's for Ger Hasid. But it doesn't mean that that's Judaism. Chas v'chalila. I can make a very strong case against Ger Hasidus. And unfortunately today it's heavily in the news, and it's going to get worse and worse because all the barriers are broken. Once one woman ran away from Ger and wrote a book, now a woman ran away from Satmar and wrote a book. Now a third woman ran away from a different Hasidus, and look at yesterday's New York Post. You will shiver, you will shake. Ribbono shel Olam. It's a real problem for them, because 1, 2, 3, there'll be 100, there'll be 1,000, ultimately there can be 10,000 too, and the Hasidus will have to revise itself, because we all live in two worlds, as Rabbi Rubin said 20 minutes ago, and Gerber Poshev Anochi, and ideas like this, which are not Teira ideas, it's Chumras, it doesn't carry, I don't believe it can be perpetuated in the Western world, where we have Western influence and have to balance it out with Torah Hashem Tamima. But it doesn't obligate me. I'm not a Gerach Hasid, I'm not a Satmar Hasid, Bavakasha. But the concept of Das Teira in the Litvische Welt, which today, Agudat Yisrael, if you don't follow my way of thinking, you are not within the fold. And I don't have to go further. The whole attacks upon, if you follow Israeli politics, the way they treat Rav Ovadia, the way they treat Shas, it's very fascinating. Our way, what is one of the people writing to me, quote, our way or the highway, as we say, swim or sink. And, okay, I accept that concept. I will comment on it in 1 minute, but let me just quote to you some of the beautiful things that they wrote to me. There is a big distinction between a chassid asking advice of his Rebbe versus a Rebbe issuing an edict. When a chassid asks a question, he is going to his Rebbe with the intention of listening to whatever his Rebbe will say. He knows that the Rebbe only has his benefit in mind. The chassid values the opinion of the Rebbe. This is similar to the way a child asks his father advice. If his father knows the answer, he will answer. And if he doesn't, he will refer his child to someone who does. And he quotes here, the Lubavitcher Rebbe, whenever you ask a medical question, the Rebbe told you, speak with the doctor who you feel friendly with, whom you have confidence in. In contrast, the yeshivish charedi view of Das Torah is very different. They are piskei dinim and other Das Torah proclamations coming out all the time about all sorts of matters. They address issues like the correct form of education, what music one may listen to, whether a person may have a computer, and even halachic matters. Pekat in your ears. The former Rosh Yeshiva of Panovich vilified, to put it mildly, any person who had a different point of view than his. Not only in halachic matters, but in every kind of matter. This is what modern day Das Torah has become. My way or the highway. And here, another from Mati Katz, who I believe is in Satma, and he tells a beautiful little story here. That after a Rebbe, the Bava of a Rebbe, I think he's talking about, gave a shiur, after he gave the shiur, students went over to him and spoke to him as if he's in Yeshiva University, a Litvashi Yeshiva, without the yurik covered. And some Chabadnik who was there asked, is this yurik haloma mutman gates? So you go to the Rebbe, Azay Fry Gaitman some Rebbe. How would you say that in English? You go to the Rebbe without any hesitancy, any diffidence. And the Chassid answered, das ist nicht unser König, nor unser Tata. The Rebbe is not our king, he is our father. So I want to tell you, I accept what they say. I was going to get to it much later, but I do have to leave you with one retort on this level right now, because I'm going to go much, much deeper. But one retort. My dear students listening all across the world, all the wonderful Hasidim who are listening, I want to tell you, everything you've said is correct, but you have one problem. Agudat Yisrael was organized by many Gedolim of different points of view, but above all, the Hasidic world. Not Lubavitch, which stood askance, but Agudat would have never gotten off the floor with the Gera Rebbe, without the Gera Rebbe. The Gera Rebbe's joining Agudat Yisrael, with all due respect to Reb Chaim Isaac, to the Chmetz Chaim, to Reb Ochanan Wasserman, and other Litvish Rashi Yeshiva, as someone who learned in Litta 100 plus years ago, I can tell you from my experience, the masses would not have followed. When I learned in Lithuania, I would venture a guess that 49% of the students learning took all the Torah from their rebellion, but had a very cynical attitude to some of their hashkafas. By the way, that went on in Yeshiva University all the way into the 70s and the 80s with Mori Rebbe Rav Soloveitchik. You don't have to believe Rakefet, read the Rav, the world of Rabbi Joseph P. Soloveitchik, read the sources that are quoted there, read what Rabbi Lichtenstein had to say, and you will know that the Talmudim took all the Torah from the Rav. They adored him. They loved him. But as Rebbe said to me, whispering to my ears, 1978, in his home in Boston, 10 Hancock Road, he said, but don't look at them when it comes to Hashkafa. They are crazy. Quote, end quote. And as he said to Rav Amital, I could wake my students up at 4 o'clock in the morning to Fenton Hashver Rambam to give an answer to a difficult Rambam. But when it comes to my Hashkafas, no one wants to follow me. What made Agudat Yisrael, Agudat Yisrael? When the Gera Rebbe said to join Agudat Yisrael, 100,000 Polish Hasidim joined Agudat Yisrael. And until today, Agudat Yisrael has tremendous strength from the Hasidic world. And then it comes back to what I said a week ago, following World War II, the success of the Hasidic world in resuscitating itself, reviving itself, the Litvisha, their tongues were out. And boy, have they emulated Agudat Yisrael, the Hasidic Agudat Yisrael. And nowadays, all over the world, you've got to light up candles with unbelievable power and seek and search, and you cannot find perhaps one Litvisha yeshiva left. It's unbelievable. We've all become Hasidim. And even in YU, a bastion of modernity, Torah and Derech Eretz, Torah Umada. But all I can tell you is, a good percentage of the students willy-nilly are Hasidim in the full sense of the word. So, Hasidim, you may have a different concept of Das Torah, a Rebbe's mein Tata, my father, I can understand that, but you succeeded so well that you created Agudat Yisrael, and your concept of the Rebbe, a focal figure, the Litvisha Welt has marched to the tune 100%, and I know what I'm speaking about. I heard Litvisha students who maledicted the Lubavitcher Rebbe, and 5 minutes later they spoke about their Rosh Yeshiva in terms that only a Chassid would speak about his Rebbe. Okay, Rakefet, as I said yesterday, a dinosaur, an individual who yet thinks on his own. For shame. How terrible a dinosaur from earlier civilization. Shmuel, and Rakefet's even worse because he believes that a Torah will thrive, and Torah thriving means that 90 Jew alive has to be a Shomer Shabbos. 99, I haven't lost the vision. When I graduated yeshiva, 61, a little kid, I had one vision. I'm going to make every Jew in America a Shomer Shabbos. Today I have even a greater vision, every Jew in the world. A Shomer Shabbos. In order to achieve that, I believe the time has come to restart the concept that a person created in the image of God has to think on his own. Emunat Chachamim? Absolutely. And Tzelem Elokim in every individual. Okay, now let us move into high gear. Daniel? Okay, your textbooks in American medical school? In Hebrew, French, or English, which is it? And when you have Israeli professors, great doctors coming in, what language do they speak? English, you got it. And I happen to know when they have conferences here, my brother tells me they bring in the biggest professors all over the world, and everyone has to know English, otherwise they're lost. Yes, Nehemiah.
You just said that the Tzelem Elokim is in every individual.
Like I should. I said that the Torah says it. The Tfarnel says it. Midilei hu nafach.
So, but that's also specifically in the Nefesh HaChayim.
Yeah, beside them.
Okay. So would the Hasidim, would they not agree with that?
No. Chas v'chalil. The Hasidim also believe that everyone has Selam
Elokim. So then what's the difference?
No, the difference is very simple. That the Noda Behuda that I quoted last week, look at the Noda Behuda. That's a Hasidic concept. We revered our Rabbeim, but beyond Halacha and everything, we also thought on our own. Doesn't mean we didn't interact with Rebbe, didn't take Rebbe's opinion. But if the Rav would tell us, join Agudat Yisrael, and I would say, no, I'm a B'nai Kivanik, I belong in Mizrahi. You follow? A chassid couldn't speak like that. That's a simple example. There are much deeper examples. I give you another example. A Talmud came to Rav Kook. His name was Menashe Ben Yamin Levine. And the Hebrew University had opened, and there was tremendous publicity. Hebrew U opened, and this young kid comes to Rav Kook and says, Rebbe, I want to go to university. So in Das Torah, his answer would have been, Chas v'chalil, you go to university, you'll be a guy, you'll be a shegetz. Rav Kook said, all right, you want to go to university? This is your choice. Rav Kook wasn't a university graduate. So he told them, but study something there that the Jewish people will benefit from. Out of Binyamin Menashe Levine, we have the Otzar Goyim today. You want another example?
No, I want...
one second. Professor Simcha Saf in Tel's Yeshiva. He went to his Rebbeim and he said, look, I want to go to university. They could have told him, Chas v'chalil, to become a shegis, an oisfaf, a bum. So Rebbe said, all right, go to university and study something and be a good Jew. Professor Asaf was a member of the first Supreme Court of Israel, a Gon Adir. He was the greatest expert on the Gonic period. His work, Tkufat HaGoinim, other works, Onshin. So you see, if you're going to take the attitude, there's one Das Torah for everybody, you're stuck. If you take the attitude that everyone has different needs and understandings and personality, then you've allowed the individual to express himself. And instead of rebelling, he becomes a Kiddush Hashem. But okay, leave it over now. Look at the Noda Behuda, it'll help you. Okay, now. Yes, Yoni.
It's possible that when it comes to issues of internet or music and stuff like this, that it's not coming from necessarily a Das Torah perspective. It's actually coming from a perspective of Psak Halacha. Is it possible that the
Jewish world actually giving? It could be they believe it, that there's that the internet has pornography, so I'm told. I've never yet seen pornography on the internet, but
no,
I guess I'm looking at the wrong sites. Okay, Baruch Hashem. I've only seen what I've seen on the internet is unbelievable. That's all I can tell you. And we discussed it yesterday. But could be. But it's all part of the bundle of Das Torah. Calling up the Lippisch Schmelzer concert, which everyone admits today was a terrible mistake, that's certainly not halacha. That was just misinformation and ushering what Rav Elashib, they attributed to him when he was no longer functioning, that he ushered this and ushered that. It's frightening. Everything is no good. The greatest example is the one that Harry Merrillis gave, but Aaron Rakepin beat it to him. You heard it right away in the Kollel. Agudat Yisrael has a convention this year. All we heard is that it's the worst generation that's ever lived. Every Jew is a no-good sinner. The greatest enemy of the Jewish people is Nassim Slifkin. I couldn't believe my ears. And every third word was Das Torah. That if you don't believe in their Das Torah, you're a guy. Well, I want to tell you something. They have a lot of problems with Torah Hashem Tamima because their Das Torah is extremely faulty. And that they can sit in America when the state of Israel is here. When Uvenei Yerushalayim Yakodesh, when Rov Minyan and Binyan of the Jewish people is here, and they can create a world where evil emotions feel totally at home, there's no Israel, it's not real, it doesn't exist. Someone wrote to me, went into a bookstore in Lakewood, a tremendous Hebrew bookstore, and said, where's the Talmud of mine, the Jaffe family? And he wrote to me, where's the Israeli division? Where's the Israeli books? The guy looked at him, Israel, what, when, where? What heard of Israel? Leave me alone. Gnug. Let's go further. Let's go into the sources. Okay. Now, what happens when you face a tremendous political, I would say, literally a material challenge? Mashahu muhashi, it's right in front of you. So you see very interestingly that it's not a Talmud Chacham you go to. It's another you go to, or the Ribbono Shel Olam. And here we have a very interesting sugi in Yoma, Masechet Yoma, Daf Ayin Gimel Amid Aleph, right through Ayin Gimel Amid Bet. Tana Rabbanan, Ketzad Shoalim, Hashoel Panav Klapi Nishal, Vahanishal Panav Klapi Shchina. Hashoel Omer, Erdof Acharei Hagdut Hazeh, Vahanishal Omer, Koama Hashem, Aleva Hatzlach. So you see, it's not the Chachamim you consult. Here you have to know what God's will is. And before Jews went to war, they went to the Urim V'Tumim. And you would ask a question and the Kohen would look at the Urim V'Tumim, the letters would light up, and Moshe, it would rap out an answer. And you had divine guidance. Now this concept is so important that it might very well be that this is a chiyuv on us at all times. Major issues, life-threatening issues. Look in the Ramban, Sefer HaMitzvot, right at the end, the Sof Mitzvot Lo Taseh, right after Mitzvah Yud Zayin, Lo Sa'aseh, Mitzvah Yud Zayin, right at the end, the Ramban says, Nachmanides, Yesh Le'inyan Mitzvot Mistapek Alai, V'hu She'yireh Li She'mitzvah Al HaMelech O Al HaShofet O Misha Am Yeshuto L'Chutziyam L'Tzava B'Melchemet Reshut O Mitzvah Li'ot Shoel Bi'urim V'Tumim V'Al Pihem Yitnaheg Binyan. According to the Ramban, this may be a mitzvah l'dorot, that whoever are the leaders of the Jewish people, and look at his language, Misha Ha'am Bishuto, it would mean a king, it can mean a judge, or it can mean a democratically elected parliament, which we have today. And by the way, the Ramban here in these few words, Nu, can anyone help me? What am I about to say? This is exactly the thesis that Rav Avram Yitzchak HaKohen Kuk develops in Mishpat Kohen. I quoted it in great detail when I gave Shurim here in the Kolel on Dinu D'Malchut Dinah. That today when you don't have a Kohen, you don't have a Levi, you don't have a central authority, you don't have a Melech, you don't have a Melucha, who runs the Jewish people? Today we have a parliament, democratically elected, a government. They have this responsibility. No. Think for a minute what this means. And now I'll explain something to you, which I didn't understand at the time. 1956, I was a college kid. I think I was in my third year, I was a junior. Junior, right, 56, 57, I was a junior, Yeshiva College. I had, one second, I'm overstating the case. I was a sophomore, 56, I was a sophomore. I had two rebbeim in college. My first rebbe was Rav Shmuel Lazer Volk. My second rebbe was Moriah Rebbe, Rabbi Yosef Dov HaLevi Soloveitchik. I write about it in Washington, how he got the Rav to give a shiur. That's not important now. Shmuel Lazer Volk was a very fascinating, but it's a very sad story, and I cite it again and again. Hitler killed 6 million, he ruined the lives of another 5 to 6 million. He may have altered our lives until today. I can only tell you, I would have never gotten involved with Russia and all that went with it. And Yitzchak, do me a favor, tell that lady who complained, I feel very bad, but she should know, I knew it was going to be a problem when I write about, I had to give examples of Mesirat Nefesh, and I know, Malka and I sent over 200 people behind the Iron Curtain. I knew it was going to be a problem, who you write about. I selected 3 people who are dead. And I write that, that the two women I write about are no longer with us. So I don't think anyone should be jealous. Among the males, David Applebaum was the natural, of course. Hashem Yikom Damo. And explain that to her. Because if I were to write about everyone, you have no idea how it transformed people, what they became afterwards. But I can tell you, anyone who was crazy enough to take my bait and start the process of going to Russia, and it had to go through the Mossad, and you don't know what went on behind the scenes, I can tell you. Someday we can talk privately. I don't write in the book all the details, but it's fascinating. They only took that bait because we all have a guilt conscience. What the heck did we do when 6 million Jews were being destroyed, burned, decimated in Europe? We did nothing. American Jewry, what did we do? Russia, we did great things. And the state of Israel today blossoms as a result of what happened in Russia and the emigration it brought. And by the way, it's an Ashkenazi. People don't realize, not just Ashkenazim, how many Sfardim came to Israel, the Bukharins. You have to understand what came out of Georgia, the Chabadnikim. It's unbelievable. Baruch Hashem. So please explain that. Now, Rav Shmuel Lezer Volk was a classic example of how Hitler destroyed a life. In Tells, he was learning B'chavruta with the Rosh Yeshiva's son. They were the two most brilliant people. Rabbi Azriel Rabinovich, Rabbi Chaim's son, and Mori Rebbe, Rabbi Shmuel Lezer Volk, they were going in G'dolei Yisrael. His chavruta was killed by Hitler. He got away to Baltimore in the late 1930s. Rabbi Revel, who himself had learned in Tells, brought him to YU. As a Rebbe, worked his way up. He's teaching the class under the Rav, a golden idea, but very sarcastic, very bitter. Life passed him by. It's not like the Rav came to America, a PhD from Berlin, mastered English. I don't have to tell you, you all hear tapes of the Rav. All right, his English was not, his Yiddish is, when you hear his Yiddish, you go crazy. You can't believe the level this man, they used to say there are three orators in the world. Winston Churchill, Abba Ibn, and Rav Soloveitchik in Yiddish. It was unbelievable. I've given from the Eder Haredit, big Rav, and they listen to a Chubishi of the Rav. They're dancing upside down on the ceiling with joy. And here you have Rav Volk, you could feel the frustration. You could feel the man when he would say, America didn't accept him. What could have been in Europe, and here he is in America. And here we are, 56. And we're, you know, at that time, there are no Haredim in YU, there's no Agudat Yisrael in YU. There's one kid, I told you more than once, I had one classmate who went with his sitzit out. What he suffered from Rav Gerelich, I cannot repeat in public. Vulgarities. And that kid became a chazan. He's over 50 years in the biggest conservative temple in Detroit today. He's the chazan. All right, Midas, I don't know whether it sits us around today, but it's unbelievable. But anyway, kids are from, raised good kids. It's okay. Kids are okay. The two that I taught are beside them. Okay. And then Mitzah Sinai breaks out. Mitzah Kadesh. And, you know, every kid in YU, we walked into Professor Offer's class in the afternoon, Hebrew literature, and Professor Offer was a seminary graduate, by the way, very interesting individual, and from Milti Offer, Nebuchadnezzar, I don't think he's alive today, but it's part of his family belongs to KJ, Rabbi Lichtenstein Shu. And we walk in, and Professor Offer says, I better teach you as much as I can today, because I know by the end of the week you're all going to be in Israel, joining the Israeli army. We were sitting there, you know, halavai, we're ready to go. We come into Rav Shmuel Lezer Volk's class, and he's furious, he's yelling at the government, Ben-Gurion, he's cursing, maledicting, Menemtarap Yiddishe Kinder mit der Haaget sein, Memzer gesagtes, men kann das tun. You take Jewish boys, you're killing them, you're sending them to the front, they're being slaughtered. Who gave them permission, these rotten crazies, Zionist morons, etc.? No. We were flabbergasted. But what do you do? It's a Ramban. How do you handle this? What do you do? Who do you turn to for advice? You see, the Gemara says you have to ask advice. All right, It's not das Torah. But you have to ask advice. You have to ask advice of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, of Anavi, of Urim V'Tumim. What do you do? There's no Urim V'Tumim today. So of course, on a simplistic level, there's a very simple answer that there are various types of Muhammad Mitzvah. But Harbor LaHagecha Hashken V'Hargo, that is common sense. And common sense is a Torah obligation. We're not required, we're not advised, lie down and let the enemy kill you. So that there's no question. We can't ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We can't ask a Navi. But fight we have to fight to save our lives. Now that's one answer. That as much as we would love the Ramban to be applicable, it's applicable with the Melchemet Rishut. It may be applicable with some Melchemet Mitzvah. I gave many of the Shirim on this in great detail. But the most elementary Melchemet Mitzvah, which by the way we have right now, Habola Hagecha, Hashken Vahargo. But on a deeper level, I want to tell you what I believe should be our guiding principle. And here, of course, I come back to something I've said and advocated. And I give Rav Shach all the credit in the world. Look into the Rav, the world of Rabbi Joseph B. Soloveitchik. Look into the long footnote. Cite Rav Shach. Rav Shach never attacked the Rav. Except one drasha the Rav gave, and Rav Shach attacks that drasha. And I have to say, Rav Shach, from his point of view, was right. Because that drasha, it's either the Rav is right, and you're wrong, or you're right and the Rav is wrong. Can't be two ways. That drasha, that concept, it decimates Das Torah. And of course, what am I referring to? Yitzchak already nods his head in agreement. Yosef Yechav. One of the drashot the Rav gave at the Mizrahi. I consider that the most. Everyone is writing about the Rav's philosophy. I saw an article in the latest tradition, subjective, objective, objective, subjective, half in half, one in one, contradiction. Oh, what they're doing to poor Rebbe. Rebbe was essentially a darshan. His philosophy, in my opinion, the philosophy was part of the darshanut he used. He had studied philosophy, used philosophic terms, but the concepts were essentially darshanut. It was like quoting from, he was a Makoba. What's the meaning? He quoted from Kabbalah. He was presenting ideas, but they split so much of his ideas and nitpicking, I don't know. Philosophy, I apologize to those among you who are philosophers, but philosophy has to be within a certain context, not... Wow, I looked at that article. The little hair I have left practically fell out. But here I consider this the Evan HaYesod of the way we should think today. And of course, what am I referring to? The Rav Teis, the Machlekes, I'm done. And I say very simplistically, but all of you have to know it and know it by heart and look at the source. It's not a hard source, it's not esoteric, it's in Hebrew, it's in English, it's in Yiddish, it's in Russian, it's in some French, it's been translated to many languages. So the Rav takes, what was the machlokes Yosef Echav? And that Yaakov, remember, if he rebukes Yosef, what are you dreaming about and telling your brothers, for Aviv Shema Tadava? And yet he's waiting to see when it will happen. And the Rav says, when it comes to halacha, we have a system. We have a concept. We have emunat chachamim. We have a way to paskin. Halacha obligates every Jew who walks the face of the earth. And when it comes to halacha, God cannot mix in. Once he gives the Torah, it's not like a yo-yo that you can pull back. And lo nitna Torah l'malachei asharet. And you have to be able to give the Rabbanim a system in which the paskin. And we all know when it comes to Reish Chodesh, even if the Rabban Gamliel made a mistake, it's right at the end of Perek Bet in Rosh Hashanah, even if Rabban Gamliel made a mistake, afilu atam izimati atam shogikin, Reish Chodesh is what Rabban Gamliel declared, not ultimate truth. You don't go to a computer. And you all know on the Yom Kippur, Rabbi Yeshua had to appear before Rabban Gamliel with money in his pockets and drive up in his car. Tanur the Achnayi, you don't need any better example. The Gemara Bab Metzia, Daphnin Ted, everyone quotes this. We quote it, everyone, the Mashal, everyone quotes that. The Rav says in his Drasha, and it's published, Kamesh Drashat, the Rav says he cried when he first learned the Gemara that the Rebbein Shalalim, Bat Kol issues, Halacha Kareb Eliezer. And they tell the Bat Kol, Lo Bashamayim, he get the heck out of here. It's none of your business. God does miracles. Look at the Gemara. And they tell God, butt out. It's none of your business. That's the halachic system. When it comes to Hashgacha questions, what do we do? How do we act? Do we fight? Don't we fight? Do we shout? Don't we shout? Do we demonstrate? Don't we demonstrate? Here, man can think whatever he thinks, but he must always look up to heaven, must always reevaluate, must always try to understand what is God's will. Does it work or doesn't it work? And that was the machloket Joseph Yachav. Joseph was telling his brothers, we're going to go down Eretz Lo Lechem, we're going to go down to Eretz Mitzrayim, we're going to suffer, we're going to be avadim, we're going to face an alien culture. We have to change our lifestyle, we have to get ready, we have to succeed, we have to go down to Egypt and we have to come out of Egypt in dignity. We have to survive as Jews. And the brothers laughed at him. What are you getting involved into God's plans? Whatever will be, will be. We don't have to prepare, we don't have to change, we don't have to have foresight. And the Hashgacha Pratit rang out, Yosef HaTzadik was correct. And that's why when we bless the children, Simcha B'nik, Ephraim Uchum Menashe, why were Ephraim Uchum Menashe Zeichel? Why not Avram Avinu, Yitzhak Avinu, Yaakov Avinu? Why of all the forefathers we bless our grandchildren, we bless our children? I didn't have sense, I never said that blessing as a father, but as a grandfather, I have said it many, many, many times over. Yisimcha b'ni kefayim menashe, because the Ephraim u'Menashe were the first Jews to live under alien culture. They grew up in Egypt, they grew up in Pharaoh's court. They were exposed to the big world. They went to university. They dressed like Pharaoh's people. And yet when they came home, they were total good Jews. And we say to this little boy, we don't know where life is going to take you. We don't know where you're going to be. We don't know the vicissitudes and challenges that you will face. Yisimcha b'ni k'Ephraim Uchum Menashe. Wherever you be, come out of it like Ephraim and like Menashe. Wow. And then the Rav made the comparison to Mizrahi and Agudat Yisrael. And he said, do you think it was simple? My father joined the Mizrahi. My father taught in Tachkamoni. My father, the son of Reb Chaim Brisker, he was an outcast. He was ostracized. And he speaks about the Rabbanim who became Mizrahiites. They threw them out of the Beis Medrash. They threw them out of the Shtibel. And take a look how the divine providence rang out. The halacha is like Mizrahi. And the halacha is like Yosef HaTzadik. And the Rav goes on, following World War II, where would we be without a state of Israel? Where would the Torah be? Look how the state opened its doors, took in so many survivors, took in so many Torah institutions. Look how Torah is flourishing. Look how we're lifting our heads again after the Holocaust. We have to look up and we have to reevaluate. Here there is not a concept of Emunat Chachamim, there's not a concept of Torah Shebaal Peh. When it comes to non-halachic she'elot, we have to constantly evaluate, is our viewpoint good or do we have to retreat? Do we have to revise? Do we have to innovate differently? And I would say that this has to be our approach. We have questions, we have doubts, we have to formulate answers on the basis of logic, on the basis of human thinking, on the basis of human endeavor, on the basis of precedent, but we can never be certain. A Jew has to think, and you have to know how to shift gears. And this is crucially important to me. And this is what I learned from the Rav. And when you look at the Rav's life, you see his entire life. He is exposed to so many challenges, but he is constantly re-evaluating. And that is Rebbe, and all the credit in the world. And I can give you one final example from the Rav's own life, when the concept of shilumim, reparations, came on the table. The Rav was, Yitzchak, you're already agreeing. Baruch Hashem, I'm hitting home runs today. Thank God. Excuse me?
There were two Ravs
in
this situation.
Exactly. When the concept of shilumim came on the table, I heard the Rav speak. He was more extreme than Menachem Begin. Those of you who know Menachem Begin's life story, they say his speeches in the Knesset, and I want to tell you, had I been a Chavir Knesset, I would have been 1,000,000,000,000,000% opposed to reparations. I still haven't changed my mind. I'm not as good as the Rav. And the Rav spoke at a Mizrahi convention. He was hysterical against taking a penny from the Germans, the Nazis, Yimach Shmam B'Zichram. 100%. Many, many years later, the Rav said publicly, maybe I was mistaken. Without the reparations, Israel wouldn't develop, Israel wouldn't have grown, Israel wouldn't be the haven it is today. Israel would not have been able to take in so many hundreds of thousands, ultimately millions of impoverished immigrants and build the society they built. But see, that's the Rav. There was total intellectual honesty and constantly looking up, looking down. Where has it led us? Where have we gone? Point number one. Much more. Yes, go ahead, Nechemiah, quickly.
So is this substantive, or how is this different from Rav Kook? Do you think that, like, you know, this perspective is 180 different from, like, Rav Kook, who said, if the Knesset says it, that's like the Urim the
No. I think that even Rav Kook, it doesn't mean the Knesset is infallible. It means that that's why you have elections, because you're judging the Knesset on their decisions. I would say on this issue, the Rav and Rav Kook are in total agreement. The Rav didn't really write about the Knesset in the sense Rav Kook did, but I'm sure that the Rav would. My own hunch is the Rav would totally agree with Rav Kook. I don't recall whether I did a paper on... I did postgraduate research on Dinner de Malchut, the dinner. And on that paper, I sat with the Rav, with Rav Shmuel Belkin, with Professor Yitzchak Tversky, Zichronim Tzadikim Levracha. And ultimately, my paper reflects their thinking. If you look at it, you'll understand. It appears in tradition, and then it appears in Rekhav Adar. And it's been republished. That paper, it was republished many times. I constantly, one time in Florida, they republished it without my permission. And it was the lead article in a book they put out, as if I had written it for the book. So I asked them, send me a copy, but next time ask permission. But I'm not one to get angry. If anyone quotes my Torah, halavai, they should quote it, but if they don't, meila, what can I do? Gentlemen, tell me, can a Rav do it all alone? Does he know everything? Does he know everything? You know something? There's an unbelievable Gemara that the bigger the Rav, the bigger the Tzaddik, the more he needs the help of an absolute, total, complete Am HaAretz. Can anyone tell me what Gemara I'm referring to? Danny, I want to ask you a question. How many years ago did you get married? Can I? 5 years already. Tell me, you chose your wife? Okay, you chose her. You asked her permission to marry her. You asked her parents. Who did you ask? Both. You're a gentleman. I just have a student who's remarrying, and he asked the parents. Man, what are you? You're in your face. You're. Let's see how old you're in. You're almost 50. You're asking permission. And he says, no, I have to do it properly. Fine. Tell me, under the chuppah, did you notice that that was the same girl you had asked to marry you? They didn't switch anything on you? You recognized her? Yeah? Good. Gentlemen, Baba Batra, Kuf Samech Chet Amir Aleph. I'm curious what Das Torah people would do with this Gemara. Baba Batra, Kuf Samech Chet Amir Aleph. Hai Tzura de Rabbanan. The Azir Lekdusha Yitata. Niba im am ha'aretz dachadei. Duma machlefula minei. Wow. Rabbinic scholar. Surah de Rabbanan means a young man, a Talmud Chacham, a Yerei Shemayim. He's going to marry the woman that he proposed to. Take an amaretz with you. Because they may be switching girls on you, and because you're so busy learning, you won't know the difference. And what does it mean? I'll explain the Gemara. It's very simple. Gentlemen, with all due respect to Yossi Sarid, Chazal had many other Maimari Chazalan women. And what are the Maimari Chazal? Ain't a little yofia that a woman is created for her beauty? We have stories. Shammai thinks Rabbi Yochanan used to make a bracha when he saw a beautiful woman. That God could create such beauty in this world. All right. So imagine a poor father has two daughters. One is a beauty, and one is not so pretty. So he makes a shidduch with the tzuva de rabbanan. He's going to marry the beautiful daughter. And the father knows when it comes to women, he doesn't look at women. He's very diffident, very hesitant. I'm going to switch women on him. Let me get rid of my ugly daughter, Rachel Velea. No, I've accomplished. He's not going to know the difference. Stick this shot in the Gemara. So Chazal say, take a amaretz with you. Who knows a little bit about Hilchot Nashim? And knows the difference between the beauty and, let's just say, the slightly ugly. No? What do you see from that, Gemara? What do you see? Gentlemen, it's not just to marry a woman. Anything you do in life, you can be the biggest gadol in the world. When you get involved in a business deal, talk it over with a businessman. Get involved with a medical question, look for the biggest expert in the world. And as Reb Chaim used to say, you're not looking for a firm doctor, you're looking for a knowledgeable doctor. If there's a choice between the doctor who's a shem, the Torah, mitzvah, the Talmud Chacham, but just a mediocre doctor, and you can bring in a goy gomor, who's a giant in this particular field of medicine, who do you turn to? Okay? And I'll tell you a little story, a true story. Story was already told in the Kolo, but it's a few years ago. The person involved told it. A true story. God should grant me years of health. I have some big skuyot. This is one of them, multiplied by many similar stories. So a Jew came from a Haredi home, brought up someplace in the greater British Empire. BMT was getting underway in the 70s. He desperately wanted to go to BMT. His father said, over my dead body, go to BMT and study with religious Zionists. Chas v'chalila. So he sent him to a right-wing yeshiva in England. And he married the Rosh Yeshiva's daughter. Terrific mind. Had two children. And turned 30, walked away from Yiddishkeit. left Yiddishkeit, gave his wife a get. Went to the big city of London. Didn't live properly with a woman who was a professor, happened to be an Arab. 10 years. Did business deals. Suddenly he turned 40, and the question gnawed at him, why did God put me in this world? Who am I? And someone in England told him to latch on to someone named Rakefet, to his Shayurim. And the guy came back, Lev Nefesh, gives a Daf Yomi Shia today in the state of Israel, etc., etc. Remarried. Big Talmud Chacham. So, in his mind, you know, he figured this Rav Rakefet, who can talk with him, who can approach him like a Rebbe? And he's doing business here. And he has this big business deal coming down. And comes the day they're going to sign the contract. And he turns to the Rosh Yeshiva of Merkaz HaRav. And he says, do me a favor. Do you have a student who knows English well? I'd like him with me because knows Hebrew and English. I'd like him with me because the negotiations are all in Hebrew and I'm about to sign a contract. A lot of money is involved. And I want someone who knows Hebrew and yet knows English well and can explain to me exactly what's happening. So you see, he understood. He can be the biggest Talmud Chacham in the world. He's doing a business deal. He needs someone who understands the languages. To end off the story, the Rosh Hashiva of Mecca sent this Chavrutas. Chavrutas happened to be Rakefet's grandson. So they closed the business deal, and this kid is explaining in English to him what the Hebrew is all about. And he says to the kid, my grandson Yaakov, how do you know English so well? He says, well, I grew up in an English-speaking home. I was born here, but my parents came in Aliyah with my mother when she was a little girl. And he says, well, what's the name of your grandparents? And he tells the guy the name. He faints on the spot. When they revive him, he says, can I speak to your grandfather? Do you think it's possible? He says, what's the big deal? And he calls me up on his cellular, and that's how I got to know this individual. But notice, a Goynish cup, but he knew he needed advice. And he calls the Rosh Yeshiva of Merkaz, where he was evidently giving donations. And he gets a kid, all right, it's a kid who was out of high school already, had learned Yerukim, was now learning in Merkaz. It's before he did army, it's years ago. And he takes the kid with him. But this is common sense. This is Tzelem Elokim. This is thinking. This is the Gemara in Baba Batra. If you're a diffident, secluded scholar, and you're getting married, and marriage is a very big decision, it's not a simple matter. You can't just show a picture to a Rebbe, or to your Rebbe, or to the Rosh Yeshiva, and say, should I marry her? But be sure that they don't fool you. Be sure you know what you're getting into. Be sure you know who she is. Vice versa. I need not tell you, the girl has to check too. I know of two cases of frum boys who told innocent, fine, outstanding girls were in medical school. Got married and both of them ended up in divorce 1 year later. They found out it was all a bluff. I mean, it's beyond words. I know two cases like that. So you have to consult. One more Gemara. This Gemara now becomes crucially, crucially important to us. You'll understand why when we get there. Crucially important. A very, perhaps the most important Gemara in Shas when it comes to Das Teira. This very issue, Mamish, Halacha Lemaisa, implications that go right until today, right through the 20th century, right through Rav Soloveitchik, right through Pinchas Mordechai Teitz, right through the Moetzet Gedolei HaTorah, Agudat Yisrael. And it's a very beautiful, magnificent Gemara, Rosh Hashanah, Daf Yutet, Amid Aleph. Can anyone tell me what Megillat Ta'anit is? Megillat Ta'anit, an ancient sefer, may have the status of a baraita, tells us which days we fast, which days we celebrate. Actually, we have a celebration. Wednesday night is Rosh Chodesh, Sudat Rosh Chodesh, etc. Long list. Many of these days we have forgotten, we don't observe anymore. But the Gemara tells us an interesting story. On the 28th of Adar, quoting Megillat Esther, Megillat Ta'anit, 28th of Adar, that this is a day that the Jews got fabulous news. And because they got fabulous news, it's a day they have to celebrate, because this is the day they established that they did not have to separate themselves from the Torah. Well, that's quite a statement. What happened? And the Gemara tells the following story. Shegazra hamalchut gezerah, the Roman government made a gezerah. Shelo yasku b'Torah, shelo yomalu et b'neihem, v'sheyichalalu shabbatot. And of course, what were the Romans trying to do? Baruch atonim v'cholam shkolim v'rom. What were the Romans trying to do? Wanted to end the Jewish people. Didn't want to kill them physically. Wanted them to become good Roman citizens. Wanted them to integrate. Wanted them to assimilate. It's like communism. Communism didn't want to kill the Jews. It's not Hitler. Hitler couldn't care less whether they were religious, irreligious, whether they were Jewish. And one quarter Jewish, they executed you. Nuns and priests were executed in the camps, because they had one quarter Jewish blood. The Romans didn't want to execute the Jews. They wanted them to become upstanding Roman citizens, contribute to Roman civilization. So it's very interesting. First of all, they made a gezeirah, you cannot study Torah. And there's no question, as a Litvak, I want to tell you, they were very smart. Being Jewish begins with the study of Torah. If American Jews would study a little Torah and know what it's all about, their only concept of Judaism is what they read in the New York Times, they read in Schmidt's papers, like the Daily News and the New York Post. So of course, concept of Torah, if you're reading the New York Post today, it's beyond words what concept you will get of Torah. But if you study Torah, and this is all of outreach, in my humble opinion, this is the greatness of NCSY, the greatness of Chabad, the greatness of Agudat Yisrael, where you can get a Torah Chavruta. People start to study, it changes their lives. And I can tell you, B'didi HaVeYuvda, I once got up in Yerushalayim HaKodesh, I can even tell you where, and Yad Rav Nissim gave this lecture, big lecture, and in the lecture I said that the art scroll creates tremendous problems for us, because we're raising a generation that no longer knows Hebrew, that no longer has facility in a Daf Gemara, that has to use an English translation. I come in the morning at 6:25. I come in the morning, so there's always one kid in the Beis Medrash from Torah Tracker. And I walk by the kid, I take a look, he's Haravin, he's studying so hard, all the books are in English. All right. It's a problem. So after I give the lecture, a few Jews come over to me, Rabbi Rakefet, we want you to know we're only Torah Jews because of Art Scroll. And these are professors. And when Art Scroll started coming out, intellectual curiosity, they wanted to see what it's all about, they started studying the Art Scroll Talmud. And from that came a total rebirth of their Judaism. So whenever I speak about Art Scroll and criticize, I have to criticize it and praise it in one language. And the answer is, better we should all be on the Meretz and not know Hebrew inside out, and there should be more Shomer Shabbos Jews in the world. What can I tell you? I understand it. When the Targum Shivim came out, what did Chazal declare? A fast day. They understood very well, the minute you're Metargem, the Torah, your knowledge of Hebrew will fall down. So the Romans were very smart not to study Torah. Number two, no Brit Milah. You have to understand that Brit Milah is a great divide between the Jew and the non-Jew. And it keeps us separate. And the minute you get rid of Brit Milah, you totally can integrate, totally assimilate. You all know with the Russian Jews where there was no Brit Milah, how many great communists there were of Jewish origin, how many great communists there were, sons and daughters, grandchildren, Gedolei Gedolei Yisrael. Communists, 100%. It's unbelievable. We've had miracles in Israel. Trotsky's grandson is a member of the Hebron community. Gone back to the name Bornstein, the original name. So thank God the state of Israel has engendered miracles. But the Romans were very smart. No Brit Milah. And then, of course, Shmirat Shabbat. Shmirat Shabbat, the Jew is unproductive. Everyone else works 7 days a week. We work 6 days a week. Shabbat is the great barrier from assimilation. Get rid of it. Outlawed. Anyone caught studying Torah, doing a bit more, observing Shabbat, he will be executed. These were the Roman edicts. The Rabbanim didn't know what to do. The Rabbanim were B'li Eitza. What do you do? Ma'asa Yehuda ben Shamua b'chabei Rav. What did the great Rabbanim in Rome do? No, a minute ago we saw the Gemara in Baba Batra. A minute ago we saw that David Pardo had to take an amaretz with him when Ariel was under the kubbat to check for sure that this is the girl he proposed to, that they're not pulling a switch on him. Now it's even worse than an amaretz. You know what the greatest Rabbanim did? Halchu v'natlu etza mimatrimita achat shegedolei romei mitziyam etzla. They went and made an appointment with the greatest matriarch in the city of Rome, the wisest woman that all the great Romans, the senators, the leaders would consult with her. They went to consult with her. Amra lahem, she said to them, Bo, v'hifkinu b'layla. Go and demonstrate at night. Look into Rashi, hifkinu tzaku b'shvakim u'rechavot, kedei sheyishmeu hasarim v'yarachamu aleichem. Go and demonstrate that the people of power should hear you demonstrating, hear you crying, hear you pleading, and do it at night. Gentlemen, doing it at night, the Mefarshim are so in right on here. You know why at night? By daytime, no one is listening. Daytime, gotta work, gotta achieve, beautiful. The sun is shining. The opening of Oklahoma, the movie. Remember it? It's considered classic. It's not just the sun. It's the beautiful, the hay growing so high. The actor on the horse driving through, the sun shining so brilliantly. Oh, what a beautiful morning. Oh, what a beautiful day. I have a beautiful feeling. Everything's going my way. Ah, that's by day. Nighttime, the human being is frightened. It's dark. It's not daytime. There are people who have illnesses. It's diagnosed. They go into a depression at night. Winter, my wife suffers from this. She claims she diagnosed herself through the internet, but I happen to know it's correct. It's raining. It's gray. It's miserable. But at night, it's always miserable. Ah, then when you cry, the world cries with you. They're willing to listen. And the Gemara goes on, Yitzchak, I studied by the Rav. You understand what I'm doing? This is the way Rebbe took a Gemara. One second.
What does it mean, the greatest matriarch?
Yeah, yeah. Oh my God, Yitzchak, please, Rashi doesn't. No, no, the Chazal. you're talking about American politicians. These are senators in Rome. Okay. Let's give them a little credit. Okay. Let's give them a little credit. And then the Gemara goes on, Holchu v'ivkinu b'layla amru eishamayim lo acheichem anachnu v'lo b'nei avechad anachnu v'lo b'nei machat anachnu manishtaneinu mikolu mavalashon Shatem goes room aleinu gizay rut kashad. And what a beautiful, they cried, they had banners, they had posters, and they said, don't we have one father, don't we have one mother? We're human beings. We may think differently. Perhaps we act differently. Perhaps we have different traditions. But why do you single us out? In communist Russia, there were so many different nationalities and so many different languages. Why do you single us out? Why can't we express our culture? It is not rebellion. It doesn't contradict you. Why punish us? Why torture us? And they listened. Ubitlum. And the gezerot were knocked out. Va'asu oto yom yom tov. And they turned that day into a yom tov. Gentlemen, that Gemara is so crucial, so important. Halacha l'maisa, that may be the most important Gemara we have ever touched in the 20th century. I will show you in future Shayurim how this Gemara dances before our eyes in she'elot that were pikuach nefesh of the highest order. And at times we knew how to paskin, and at times we were ignoramuses and boors, and we shed Jewish blood because we didn't know the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah, and we let our own gaiva, and we didn't look over our shoulders and look up to God on what works and what doesn't work. And I can tell you that I censored one part of my life out of Washington because Kvod Hashem Hasteh Dava. It hurts me to write against Gedolei Yisrael. I didn't write. But I will share with you the story that future generations should know that Chas V'Chalila, if we face these issues again, what our approach has to be. But what a powerful Gemara. So look what we see. Oh my gosh. Das Tera. No. Emunat Chachamim, yes. Problems beyond Torah Shebaalpeh. Of course we'll consult with Rabbanim. Of course we'll consult with people we consider more intelligent than us. More insightful. More visionary. But we have to be honest. We have to look for the best. At times the best may be an Amoritz who will go with us to check that the girl is the beauty that was promised to us. At times we'll consult with a matriarch. I don't know if Yitzchak's explanation is correct. I would like to learn on a more positive level. But all right, you studied with Professor Zeitlin. There's nothing, you don't understand that, Ephraim. He's a Talmud of Solomon Zeitlin. You got to ask Dr. Honig, Zichron Olavracha, and ask Dr. Regis. Those are all, I understand. They will explain already. Ask their opponents why they're opposed to Dr. Zeitlin's students, and you will understand why.
Oh, it sounds like Shakespeare.
God, right, did I?
No, didn't.
Where's Bloch? Didn't I give Bloch two books on Shakespeare, that claiming Shakespeare is a Jew and a new Gemara? And this is one of the proofs, absolutely. He's paraphrasing the Gemara. All right, could be. Shakespeare was Jewish. Lenin was Jewish. By the time we're finished, everyone in the world, for good or for good, winds up being Jewish. Gentlemen, what a powerful thought. What a powerful thought, the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah. Sometimes we have to go to a Goya, to a matriarch, to a woman. So if Yitzchak's right, Yitzchak's right, but she was a very intelligent woman, and the influence she had, We need her advice. And what advice? So let me reiterate. All right, we're still, we're just scratching the surface of Das Torah. But I want to do it properly, once and for all. It's a fascinating topic with so many implications. I want to do it properly.
What's the story you left out of the book?
We'll get there. We'll get there in context. I have to deal with the Sheil and Tshuva. It's not all regular chad. It's an hour worth of lecturing. We will get there. It's in my notes, and I want to get it out of my system. That's self-survival. Hey, Rebbe, I wish the Rav could hear this and either smack my face or give me a kiss. But either way, when, as we spoke about... I hope so. Had a great Rebbe here. You don't understand what I'm talking about, but I meet these kids in America and they're 23 years of age. They didn't go to college. They have no panasa. I've seen so many of them become ice from. I've seen their children of fathers learned in Lakewood, Goyim Gemurim, with no panasa. I saw, I don't want to mention the community, a kid who's a mashkiach. That's all he can do. He never graduated high school. It's a mashkiach. Doesn't even pull on tefillin every day. Daven, mandach hashmei. Works as a mashkiach. His father grew up in Borough Park, sent to Be'er Shmuel High School, and his Rebbe told him in high school, work is a klala. He quoted with the Nachash. He told me word by word, his Rebbe told him. And he said, you don't get involved with a klala until you have to. The kid never went to college, never went anywhere, never had a panasa, came to it. Don't ask, he got divorced. Kids went to Be'er Shmuel and here went there. Not one child was religious. Not one child. God have mercy. I had a great Rebbe, that's all I can say. We never had any conflict. Ger v'toshav anachi imachem. We lived it, we experienced it, and it worked. And we look up to the Ribbono Shel Olam, simcha b'nei Ephraim u'chum Menashe. Okay, we began with our good friend Harry Merrilis. I have to tell you, I stand in awe because he comes out with a blog every day, and every day he says something of insight, something of value. If you go to the blog on Rabban Soloveitchik, which I believe was after the one I quoted today, he gives you a link to the OU convention and the video, a 12-minute video about Rabaron and Ella Soloveitchik. It's very kedai. I have a lot to add to that video. If you watch it, you can talk with me. We'll talk about it. Okay. Then we spoke about, so far we have Emunat Chachamim and we're not going to have this Das Torah of running with every little question. I commented on all the emails I got. And I apologize, I just don't have the time to answer everyone individually. I'm not like the Lubavitcher Rebbe that had a secretariat around him. I have one part-time secretary who is really the receptionist who has mercy on me and helps me answer emails, etc. But I apologize, but I did deal with it in class. And I did answer you in class. And very fascinating, if the Rebbe's our father, very fascinating. Moshe, you know what's interesting? How bitter they are against the Litvish world. You understand that quote with Rav Shach? That's a powerful quote. I wouldn't speak that strongly, but all right, if I'm quoting it, I'm quoting it. But nevertheless, Rakefet says, I accuse you because Agudat Yisrael, without Agudat Yisrael, without the Hasidic world, Agudat would not have gotten off the floor. So please, don't run away entirely and said you played no role in Das Torah. Also, I don't accuse you, I stand in awe of you. The Litvishi Yeshivat looked at you with their tongues out and your success and went the way of the Hasidic world 100% and even more. It may be now what's happening with the sex issue, with the women coming out and writing bestsellers. How many copies did Washington Avenue sell? I understand his new book already sold over 100,000 copies with a top publisher, all about the schmutz in the Hasidic world, and it's one after another. God have mercy. I don't know. In my world, we don't have so much schmutz, but okay, maybe I'm naive. Maybe I wear blinders. Maybe I don't look at the right websites, as Yitzchak said. What do we do when we have questions? I quoted to you the Gemara in Yuma, the Ramban. What do we do today when we can't consult you on the Tumim? And I went into a discourse on the five drashot, Vayachlum Yosef. That drasha changed my life, plain and simple. The Gemara in Baba Batra, which is so potent and so powerful. Take an amaretz with you to be sure she's the right woman. But above all, the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah, nothing compares to that Gemara, the matriarch. Gentlemen, first of all, next week we pick off on Monday, pick up exactly where we left off. On Sunday, we go into heavyweight material with Psak Halacha. Do you paskin on your own? Do you bring in others? Wow. Rav Herzog, Rav Weinberg, Washington Avenue, they will all star in next Sunday's Sheyua. If anyone here has, first of all, who has big Hasidic Yichus? He gets it first choice. This is an invitation. Last week, the daughter of the Biyana Rebbe, who happens to be the son of my teacher, and I tie in with that family. This is a grandson of the great Biyana Rebbe who came to America in the 1920s, a granddaughter. She got married to a distant relative from Toronto. The Masada Kedushin was the love of the boy, a YU graduate, Rabbi Bleich's brother-in-law. He was brought in all the way from Toronto, the Sadeh Kedushin. So you had the Biyana Rebbe's daughter, granddaughter of the very famous Biyana Rebbe in New York, I will yet talk about in Das Torah, and marrying this boy. Here's the invitation to the wedding, and here's a special invitation from the boy's grandmother, the widow of my teacher, Rabbi Dr. Menachem Breyer. If anyone has a Hasidic soul, hold on to this. In 50 years, you can auction it off at Sotheby's for the equivalent of $5,000 in today's money. That's number one. And I'm being serious. Not that serious, but serious. Number two, here, if you want about the Hasidic comments on my shir, here they are. And wait. Here, all about Yiddish-speaking Japanese and what's going on in Japan. I want to thank Larry Zeifman. Sent me from yesterday's New York Times, or 2 days ago, the Rav is quoted on the op-ed page in the New York Times about a sportsman, the dialectical tension, Adam 1, Adam 2. Here's the New York Times about a YU graduate, Jonathan Halpin, the basketball coach. Very fascinating. My dear students, until we meet again in health and happiness, Das Vedanya.
Very good. Bye.